Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations. We are coming at you from the plains of Naboo as, wow, I've got to say, the best Gungan barbecue has just wrapped up. So good, so good. And here with me, as he is always every week here on Aggressive Negotiations, the one and only fantastically fantastical Master John Mills.
So when you say Gungan barbecue,
we were not eating Gungans. They invited us to their barbecue. I mean, we saw plenty of wildlife to barbecue in that forest.
Yes, so. I think that is an important distinction to make.
Yeah, and the Kullo Quawfish is delectable.
How could it not be? Dryden Voss gets a whole box of it once a month, right?
Well, he did get a whole box of it once a month.
Well, that depends on where we are in the timeline, Matt.
This is true.
Yes.
Of course, where we're going to be coming at you tonight as we dive back into the Jedi Apprentice series with the Uncertain Path. So coming from this time period, yes, Dryden Voss would most likely still be alive. He'd be probably very young at this point.
A young supervillain.
Right. And again, we have no idea how long-lived his species is, so who knows? I mean, he could always just look like Don Draper. I mean...
Yes, that's true. That's true.
But before we dive into this fantastic book, and I'm spoiling it, giving it away. You can find us all over the place. Make sure you are hitting us up on all of the usual suspects. We've got Twitter @JoinNerdParty. That's the entire network you can follow. And of course, @TheJediMasters for everything Star Wars related, Star Wars love, and of course, Aggressive Negotiations. I'd like to get a little bit of a shout out there to everyone who's listening. Follow us on Twitter. If you haven't followed us on Twitter and you're listening to the show, please do that. We love interacting with fans. John and I think it's one of our favorite things to have conversations with people about Star Wars on the old Twitter. And we've had some rip-roaring great conversations. Our goal is to show here that you can have good fan conversations, even if you disagree, about Star Wars, and still come out respectful. So if you like respectful, awesome, fun Star Wars conversation, follow us at The Jedi Masters. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're also on iTunes, which, you know what? If you like Aggressive Negotiations, you haven't hit us up with an iTunes, you know there are lots of people who listen to this show, and I would say only a handful of them really have given us iTunes reviews. So hit us up with a star rating review over on iTunes. Help people find the show. Help this show grow if you like it. And we read every single review on the show, good, bad, or ugly. Luckily, they've all been good. We're very thankful for that. But we like to make you famous on their show by reading out your review and what you said about us. So again, go over to iTunes and give us that star rating review. Also, make sure you subscribe wherever you're getting your podcasts, because as soon as we publish the show, you get it. So if you do that, no matter what happens, come rain or shine, you'll get your Aggressive Negotiations on an old Tuesday. And unless, of course, we've fell into that nest of Gone Darks, and that doesn't really count. You can also find us online at thenerdparty.com. And then if you'd like to send us an email, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose the show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and John and I can converse with you that way. So, with all of the particulars out of the way, John, we have, I would say, really been enjoying this Jedi Apprentice series. And we are here at the Uncertain Path, which kind of left us on a cliffhanger with the last book, as Obi-Wan Kenobi had left the Order and found what he felt like was another calling to stay on this planet with the young and help them try and win this war that has been raging on this planet between the two sides for generations. I mean, literal generations.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised in the last book when Obi-Wan left. I was very curious where this one was going to pick up, what it was going to look like, and it's very interesting because it really does pick up in the great Star Wars sense. It feels very much like the series has found its footing, and it's much more comfortable starting off in the midst of things. So that these chapters really have started to feel like serials as opposed to any sort of, you know, there's not an overly burdensome sense of having to reestablish anything when these stories start. So a couple of lines to refresh your memory when you get there, and then you're up and running very quickly. It's so interesting, too, because this is composed at a time where none of us were really sure. Like, we knew the Jedi Order was different than what we imagined mm-hmm. it, but we weren't quite sure what that meant yet.
Yeah.
And so to have Obi-Wan leave, we know he's going to get back, but what's the procedure for coming back? What's the repercussion? How long does this last? And so I had a lot of, I think, fun questions coming into this that... you know, it jumps right into.
You know, one of the things that really struck me about the book was, as you were mentioning, you know, we didn't know a lot about the Jedi Order and just kind of the way it worked. And so, you know, it almost feels like in this series, this early shocker of Obi-Wan, you know, renouncing the Jedi Order and staying on this planet in this city of... Zehava, I think is how you'd say it. They really do almost the same thing that the Clone Wars did when they shocked us with, you know, okay, this is what the Mandalorians are, pacifists,
right.
And kind of making it very different than we had ever thought it could be. And one of the things I also thought was really interesting here, though, and one of the parallels I saw was for anyone who holds any certain faith, most of the time in your life, especially if you've been raised in a certain faith, you have to come to that faith then as you grow older on your own. You have to kind of usually struggle through things and figure things out. And if you still hold to that as an adult, most usually that means that there was some sort of crisis or some sort of time in your life where you walked away from it or almost walked away from it and then found yourself, you know, going back to it and choosing it basically for yourself. And in many ways, I kind of felt like, you might laugh, but this was Obi-Wan's come to the Jedi moment where it was always what he thought he was going to do, and then he thought he found something else that was more of what he would believed in, and this is really all about his kind of, you know, really making the decision then for himself, yes, the Jedi Order is what I choose, and this is where I want to be. And so I thought that was kind of fascinating and really interesting to allow, you know, Jedi to make that decision, especially since, you know, they're all kids who have grown up in the temple and, you know, having this, something that they've been raised with their whole life, but really having this moment where they would allow a young Jedi to find their way.
I think that, you know, that's all incredibly valid and, you know, yes, I agree with it. I think that Obi-Wan, you know, up to this point, you know, there's the added factor of he was unsure if he was going to get chosen at all. He had sort of given mm-hmm. up. Like, he's had a very interesting, much more interesting path with the Jedi than I think any of us anticipated. Again, you know, like you said, with the Mandalorians and stuff, like this is all about breaking down our perception of how the Jedi worked or how a Jedi took that path or how
right.
sure they were. What I found very, very interesting is this was sort of a reflection of what I thought was going to happen in Anakin's life before the movies happened or had happened in his life. Because, you know, we'd said, you know, followed, you know, your uncle thought that you'd follow old Obi-Wan on some damned fool idealistic crusade like your father did. And I always had this notion in my brain that Anakin had walked away and then been talked into coming back. So I almost wonder if there's a sense of trying to anticipate that storyline, which of course isn't the way things happened, but there's almost a sense of anticipating that storyline here with this. And what I think would be extremely interesting would be if they decided to go back and start exploring the time period again between, especially between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, to find out if Anakin had had the same sort of moment that Obi-Wan did. This isn't the life that I thought it was going to be. I want to find something that has, and it winds up snowballing later that would actually wind up tying into Palpatine saying you've always want a life of meaning, well, of significance.
Isn't that exactly, I mean, we talked about the Obi-Wan and Anakin comic, and he does think about leaving. You know, he, that mission, he's legitimately contemplating leaving the Order. And in fact, they go on that mission, and Obi-Wan says, you know, if you still feel the same way when we get back, you can leave. And so we do kind of get that in the new canon. So they have kind of explored that idea that Anakin feels frustrated with where he is in the Order, and we see, I think, this is another place where, you know, I think we find this series kind of confirming that it should still be canon, honestly, that it
there's no reason it shouldn't be,
that it fits so well with what we've seen in new canon. And so, I 100% agree with you. I think, you know, this is, It is fascinating to see Obi-Wan as a character be much more nuanced than most people give him credit for. And no, I'm not just talking about from a certain point of view conversation, but that the character is not just as cut and dry as we thought. And it gives this, I think, the stalwart Jedi character much more gravitas and you can see then, as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking, you know, at the prequel trilogy and as he's trying to help Anakin maybe not make some of the mistakes that he made and maybe be a little, you know, more lenient on him than he should because of that. And you can just kind of see this. It's almost as like the way parents try to change their parenting style from what their parents were. Because, you know, they want to help their kid, you know, and so there's all these ties that I feel like this series is really doing for me. And it makes me appreciate the work that Jude Watson has really put into the series. I feel she really did sit down and think about this very deeply, it feels like, for the stories that she's giving the characters.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, I think that what you're speaking to and speaking to what Watson did is everything feels very true to the characters. I said this when we reviewed, you know, an earlier entry, I think all the way back in the first one. It sounds like Qui-Gon in my head. I can hear Liam Neeson saying this. And that's not just a testament to knowing how to write words that Liam Neeson, the person, would say, but also, even though I only got him in one film, I still have a very clear perception in my brain of how Qui-Gon speaks. I got enough of him to form a baseline. And I think also I would offer as a supplemental more than a counterpoint about Obi-Wan's quote-unquote leniency is seeing this could be used as an explainer for why Obi-Wan isn't lenient so much as not recognizing true warning signs. Anakin going through something similar like this at some stage, Obi-Wan might not be as worried as he should be. It was like, oh, well, I came back. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think that ties in because you'll see, I think, you know, speaking as a parent, you have to be watchful for the fact that you can't presume just because you figured your way out that your child will. And so you have to still be there and aware of those steps. Like all you can know is how you figured your way out, and you have to be as hands, you know, and that gets into the whole discussion and everything. But what I find very interesting is the tension between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan really seems like it pays off down the line, because they are close and they regard each other with a great deal of respect. And I think that getting all of this background history for them, you see they really have, they're not together because they have to be. They weren't slapped together in the sense of it was inevitable that they would be master and Padawan. There's a lot of, in a sense, like a healthy relationship growing here, because they're learning each other's boundaries and giving each other space to screw up. And so I think that's a very refreshing and an interesting twist to this.
What I really like what you just said, because I think the idea, you know, we had the beginning where Qui-Gon has to kind of choose Obi-Wan, and he then, of course, you know, when Obi-Wan chooses to stay in this book, he feels somewhat betrayed in that, because he has mm-hmm. dedicated himself to Obi-Wan. And what I love by the end of this book is that Obi-Wan has a different perspective on his master, Qui-Gon, and realizes how much he needs him still. And again, I think it's that, you know, it really is about that growth of being able to say, I still need another person in my life. I still need
right.
someone to show me the way, and to admit that you are not strong enough or smart enough or, you know, capable enough at this point in your life to be able to be at it on your own. And there's a real wisdom that you see in Obi-Wan by the end of the book to be able to put himself under the tutelage of Qui-Gon again and hope that he can be forgiven. And what I also appreciate about Obi-Wan at the end of the book is that he does not expect to be forgiven for this. He actually expects Qui-Gon to not bring him back, to not accept him again. And so I appreciate that humility of Obi-Wan being willing to say, I will accept the consequences for my actions. I'm not going to throw a hissy fit about it, you know. And what you see there is then the grace of Qui-Gon to accept him back. And I think it creates this real true bond of trust, because both of these men have now decided to put their lives in the hands of the other completely. And there's a real marked difference in that when both people really are truly committed in a way that they weren't at the beginning. And now by the end of this book, that's happened. And I think that's really, I think that's really smart, because it creates a relationship built on real mutual trust and respect, which is great.
You know, speaking of trust and respect in their relationship, and understanding that their pasts cannot be erased, that they live in the shadow of their past decisions, is a very nice parallel between them and the story of the Meladadan, and trying to figure their way out of everything is actually really interesting. And it's even more interesting because you have what I find to be obviously unintentional, but there's an echo here with what Kylo says in The Last Jedi about destroying the past, burn it all to the ground, kill it if you have to. And that's the whole conflict here with the Meladadan, with the elders and the young, is destroying the past doesn't change it. Going and destroying those monuments to what you disliked or what happened in the past, the meaning can change and carry a different significance. And what's more important is rebuilding and healing rather than re-prosecuting what happened before. In a sense, because we know that Qui-Gon is going to, you know, open his arms, bring Obi-Wan back, because obviously they're going to be master and apprentice by the time you know, well before we get to the Phantom Menace and everything, you have a really, I think, really poignant and really enduring point about you can't get hung up on what happened. You have to find a way to move forward, and you can't just sit there and hammer on everybody's sins. You know, you either have to forgive them or don't. Because if you don't, you're just going to keep fighting. If you do, you can move forward and heal.
On top of that, one of the things, you know, even connecting all the way to, you know, The Last Jedi and the whole idea of the past and history and all that thing, and even, you know, into what Luke Skywalker does, which is just to kind of reject out of hand the past because there were bad things that happened, instead of also remembering that there were also good things that happened, and being able to differentiate then between what do we get rid of and what do we keep from the past. And there's a whole big point in this book about this idea of, should we really be destroying everything of the past because that's all we have left of it? And even if it is bad, shouldn't we also remember that too? You know, that we can't just forget the past or else we were going to repeat it. And what's fascinating is that by trying to destroy the past, the young actually begin to repeat the past because they haven't truly learned the lessons of it. They begin to repeat that same cycle again, and they almost fall completely into it. And the planet almost comes to chaos all over again because of this idea of, we are going to leave the past in the past. In fact, we're going to actively work to destroy what was there in the past, the things that remind us of it. And that actually almost leads to their destruction because they almost fall back into the same cycle. And I think there's a real, there's such a great lesson there of learning this idea that obviously if we forget the past, if we throw it under, you know, the rug, we're just going to probably repeat those same mistakes because in the end, there's not much new under the sun. Everything's been tried in history. And the problem is forgetting that history is usually what leads us to just keeping it into repeating cycle.
Right. And it's really something where I don't know that either of us ever expected to get something like that from a YA series. We keep going back to that point. But I think that that is what's amazing, is that this is an enduring sort of lesson that I would want communicated to my own children. Like, I would want to have this be a discussion starter with them about, well, what's the mistake in their thinking here? Why can't they just accept that these monuments exist? They mean something different, and the conversation around them can change.
Yes.
And destroying them doesn't change what happened. And on top of all of that is this idea that the only way to come together is for everybody to acknowledge that nobody is blameless.
Yes.
Not to move forward as if, you know, everybody's got a spotless life, and to put the weapons down and move forward. And what really I struggled with this specific book was the fact that this is beautiful, and I love this conversation that we're having, and I think it's an amazing through line, and Obi-Wan's journey is fascinating, and the B plot was distracting. Having this series of thefts going on and cutting back to that, I really would have rather had it be Qui-Gon in conversations talking from his point of view, as opposed to having to try to solve some sort of mystery, because in a sense, that part of it that winds up being the flip side of the coin, where you know that that's just set up for the next storyline.
Right.
And so it rings a little bit hollow, and I really would have preferred to have it be completely focused just on these things, as opposed to muddying the waters, as it were.
Yeah, I can definitely understand what you're saying, and I think that I agree with you for the most part. I think the place where it maybe worked slightly better for me was the fact that the struggle that Qui-Gon is going through as he's doing this search and working on these thefts, a lot of that also has him connecting his frustrations with what's happened with Obi-Wan, and it gives us an insight into his character there. And so it's not completely wasted for me. But yes, I do agree with you that in many ways, this, you can tell completely that this is set up for the next book. And in some ways, because it's not going to pay off just yet, it is a little bit frustrating. I feel like it is a slightly more redeemable, though, just because we do get a lot of things from Qui-Gon's perspective. And in many ways, what I like is that she connects it back to other things that have happened with his, you know, previous student with Xantos and everything. So we're actually connecting it with the history previously that, you know, has been given to us. And,
sure.
And so, yeah, but I think that you do have a very valid point, and I agree with you that as well as it can work, I do think it is more distracting than necessarily beneficial, and that is a little bit disappointing for the rest of what really, really works here in this story.
Yeah, and I didn't expect that, but I think that instead of having it seem like a negative, I think that what it is that the themes in this one that are explored about moving forward, like the setup for the discussion about the past and, you know, warring over the past and re-prosecuting those things is set up very nicely in the previous book. And this just goes so deeply into it that, in a sense, there's nothing about the structure that's really markedly different. It's simply that this one vein of thought was so strong and so well done that there's no B plot you could match with it that would keep up.
Yeah, and I think that it feels like what they struggle with is, okay, what do we have Qui-Gon do, you know? And
right.
So I guess the way they went through it was, okay, let's give him this mission at the temple that allows him then to have a lot of internal dialogue and dialogue with other people like Yoda and whatnot.
And the scene with Yoda.
Yes.
That conversation is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's wonderfully
really
done.
Really well done. You know what I thought it was also interesting is the way that it does give us an aspect of learning what life at the temple is like. And, you know, so that what's happening there is very unusual for that temple. And so and what I felt like that did in some ways was kind of help build us toward the you know, the prequel trilogy, you know, where things in the Jedi, you know, order aren't necessarily as copacetic as they used to be. And this gives a little hint that things are slowly beginning to maybe unravel the Jedi in a way that hadn't before. So that was an interesting aspect for me.
Interesting as well was the description and places they went to were, oh really, you have a lake, okay,
which
you
was know like it's awesome.
it's incredibly awesome, and the thing is it speaks in a sense to I love quote, you know, discovering, oh, you just didn't see that corner of the Jedi Temple. It was over there. It was just always hidden by the pillars. Oh, okay, fine. I'll buy it. That's whatever. You know, it's like the trees in the Yoda arc in the Clone Wars. Oh, you have a courtyard with trees. Yeah, we do. Okay. But it's interesting because what the lake and the foliage spoke to me about was, I remember one of the ideas, and this keeps coming up in conversation lately, but in Star Wars Visionaries, there was this concept of green Coruscant that on the upper levels, like, and so it spoke to that. Like, that idea, I think, has probably been there and remains somewhere in there, this idea that that there is greenery somewhere, that they found a way to make it work, that not all natural life is gone. If anything, it would be interesting as well, because you could always say, well, it was there and then something happened or they needed more space and so they got rid of it. And that winds up speaking to the theme of the Jedi losing their connection with the living force by being on a city planet. You know, more and more of the vegetation and everything goes away.
What I also thought was interesting is that the way in which the Mila Dadan relationship and war speaks to the parallel of what will happen to the Republic and the Separatists and how they will get caught in this war where it just becomes different sides. And it becomes a label that you throw on these people and you forget the humanity of these different people. And in much the same way, it was interesting, you know, I just talked with Nick Anastasi over in the 602 Club about Man in the High Castle, which is just so much of what happens in that reality that they're in, where the Nazis have won and the Axis powers have won, and people just become a label instead of an actual person. And therefore, you treat people according to their label, you know. So if they are an American, especially in the Pacific states, they're a second-class citizen compared to the Japanese.
Right.
If you're not somebody who lives up to the Nazi, you know, Aryan race, you know, perfection, you are less than human, basically, to them. And so in many ways, this conflict that we see playing out on this planet that Obi-Wan is on reflects the conflict that is going to happen, where these sides, they choose their side, and then they continually churn out war instead of ever suing for peace in any way, shape, or form. And obviously, that's because Palpatine's behind things. But the Jedi also caught up on this conflict.
You even have a person in whom people have placed trust acting behind the scenes because he sees an opportunity to rise to power in this book. And so Mawat, is that? Well, anyway, that character winds up doing the thing that almost starts the war. So in a sense, you could see that this is sort of a pseudo Palpatine manipulating everybody's trust and then maneuvering the two sides against each other. Of course, in this, it turns out decidedly differently than how it did with Palpatine and everything. Mm-hmm. But that's all just to say that, you know, your analogy is incredibly apt, right down to the fact that there is somebody manipulating everything for their own personal gain without regard to the cost to either side.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I really liked about that, again, is the way in which, and this is where I feel like the series, it picks up that feeling of Star Wars in the best way, and that there are echoes, but they don't feel like copies. It just feels like this beautiful rhyme of the tone poem, where we see these mirror images of things, but slightly differently. They give us the kind of reinforce these messages, and I think that's what you were talking about. These are things you'd want your kids to be cognizant of and reading about and understanding, because they're such important messages. And the way that they're portrayed here, then of course, you know, as we were talking about, they connect with the prequel trilogy, and we were connecting them all the way even to The Last Jedi and the sequel trilogy. And so these thematic elements that Watson has picked up, she's done such a good job to do that, so that we are intimately connected with Star Wars and we feel the Star Wars here, not just because she nails characters, but also because she nails the themes of the series in the most important ways. And you know, I say that because I don't think it can be overstated how important that is, because connecting with those specific themes is one of the biggest reasons, you know, George created Star Wars in the first place. So
absolutely. So we're left like a broken record yet again, praising an entry in this series. And I I actually look forward to reading these books, and I did not read them at the time. You know, we've established that, but like, I didn't read them at the time, and now that I'm reading them, I'm glad that I have the opportunity. I'm really glad we're doing this series as we're going through. What did you wind up giving this a rating, or is there even a point to a rating?
You know,
because we obviously both enjoy them so much that, you know, splitting hairs at that point, right?
Yeah. The only thing I'd say, and I'm just kind of speechless, but the series continues to show itself to be one worth reading, even though it's quote unquote non-canon.
Right.
And to me, the Star Wars books that hold the test of time, whether canon or non-canon, are the ones that add to the series in a way that make you glad that you read them, so they inform the films. It expands the universe, right? And so this truly expands the universe in a way that makes me joyous and joyful because I've actually read them, and they then inform the way I view the prequels. And then, as we were talking about, we were all the way at the very last film of the series so far with ways that this connects. And so to be able to have that kind of influence still with a book that's quote-unquote non-canon is pretty impressive. It shows just how well that Watson did her job here. And so, yeah, I mean, when it comes to, like, non-canon books, Plagueis comes to mind as a book that I think is still amazing and worth reading, even though it's not canon. The original Thrawn trilogy, I really enjoyed the Kenobi book. You know, those kind of things where it's just like, I still go back and reread these books, even though they're not canon, because they add something to my experience of Star Wars. And that's what I think this series does in a way that I didn't necessarily truly expect when we started this, but sure I'm glad we did, because it was a good decision on our part.
I started it as a lark, as sort of like, yeah, why not, sure, this will be fun. And now I'm thinking, when are we going to cover the next one, because I really want to read it.
That was so, my plan. Excellent.
Yeah, you know, and what's interesting is it's always true that after we have our discussion about each one, I go back and I realize that there's a very bad tendency that I have, I think a lot of us have, not to want to give a break to a franchise book or material, because I think there's this trained perception that, well, I have to be a little bit harder on this because otherwise everybody's going to say I'm too soft on it. And just talking about this, I just realized how much I really enjoyed it.
Right.
Especially the main plot line. And so, yeah, I mean, if people want to discuss the Jedi Apprentice series with you, where can they find you online?
Yeah, please do. Find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You know, I just want to jump off on that real quick, is just to say, look, this is a series that I think is worth reading, because every time I read it, it makes me want to go back and watch, like, the prequels and the Clone Wars again, you know, because I feel so connected with the universe in that way. And so it's a successful venture so far. And I am with you. Every time we read one, I'm like, where are we diving in the next one? So hit me up on those places under MattRushing02. You can find me here on the network doing Owl Posts with Drea Kaufman as we're talking about Harry Potter one chapter at a time. You can find me on the Trek FM network. I do a couple of shows over there. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The other is the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all the franchises we can. In fact, if you hit it up this week, you may hear John Mills talking about a film on the 200th episode. I just maybe. Wink, wink, wink. And then last
That's
but not
a good
least,
tease.
Doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. And of course, you can find those wherever you get your podcasts. But John, enough about me and my silly ventures. Where can people find you?
Oh, well, gosh, I'm nothing but a silly venture, Matt. You can find me as Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice, KESSELJUNKIE. Typically pretty active on Twitter. But you can also, you know, I'll go ahead and say, and I know, Matt, you're on these services too, but, you know, there are some social services that I like to use. Goodreads is one of them.
Yes,
when I
yes.
read these books, I'm active there. Kessel Junkie there as well. And over on Letterboxd, which is a film review social network. So you can find me there at those places. And, of course, you know, in the co-pilot's chair of the battleship Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. So all of that said, Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.